Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And, we're a couple of minutes late tonight. I had the other show go a little bit longer before us. And so, here we go. I thought this would be a very interesting show to talk about some things that are a little bit on the far-out esoteric side. You know, I go that direction sometimes. And for those of you who aren't aware, this is a show about metaphysics and spirituality. And science and other related and sometimes unrelated issues. Tonight I thought we'd talk about developing communication with the next kingdom. Now, this is not a telephone system that we're going to be describing this evening. It's sort of like much more a development of our own minds to be able to match up to the minds of those who function within the next kingdom. And to begin with, I thought it would be good to kind of define and explain how the minds of those in the next kingdom function in comparison to ours. Because I've had this question posed to me sometimes, and it's very difficult for a lot of people to understand it, because the name of the kind of thought they use is called controlled intuitional thinking. And you could say, oh, what's that? Yeah. I'm going to define it for you so you can understand it. And I think once I do explain it, then you'll see the problem of us trying to communicate, which is a good place to start from, in my opinion, anyway. And so, here we go. The next kingdom, sometimes referred to as the kingdom of souls, or liberated souls, I like to use the word, but many times it's just referred to as the kingdom of souls. And besides that, they're also referred to as the kingdom of people or beings who are advanced enough beyond human to be able to be masters of the ageless wisdom. Now, these beings, some of them are advanced human beings, and others have never been human, ever, and they never will be, unless they join with the human, which they eventually might, but an advanced kind of being, not a human being. And this is that's referred to as the higher energy kingdom. There's a lower energy kingdom, too, of beings that actually are lower in consciousness than human beings. But the ones that are higher are higher. That's what you would expect. So we have this division because the life of our universe is divided up by kingdoms. And there's a reason for that. It's to protect one kingdom from being adversely affected by another kingdom, some at least of the time. Now, this is true of the lower kingdoms and humans, until humans gain enough development in their civilization to incorporate more than half of the kingdoms below them within their own civilization, and that creates a bonding between the humans and the lower kingdoms, and gives the human superiority in control over the lower kingdoms. This happened, by the way, very recently in human development, about the year 1975. So right at that time, give or take a year or two, that we, as humans on planet Earth, we garnered enough of the lower kingdoms incorporated within our own, which we call civilization, to be able to control more than half of those kingdoms. And that's kind of a treacherous thing because we as humans are not that great in terms of being enlightening and virtuous. And so our production of effects on those kingdoms, since we've really gained that much control over them, has been pretty much a negative for the lower kingdoms. But with that exception, kingdoms are separated. They're separated by consciousness and time and space, which allows them to enjoy some security from being destroyed from one kingdom to the next. Let me give you an example of that. Humans, if you go back, let's say 500 years ago, make it simple. 500 years ago, humans had no understanding of chemistry other than alchemy. chemistry or the science of how things interact together in mineral sense elements was completely lacking. And that was really only discovered a little over a couple hundred years ago. So 500 years ago, we were just, had no idea. Now, there were a few members of the human kingdom that had a little better understanding. They were the great thinkers, but not that much of that particular part. And then if you go to the next kingdom above that, from the mineral, you go to the vegetable or plant kingdom. And the plant kingdom, if you go back 500 years ago, we had very little understanding of how plants grow, because we didn't know anything about DNA, etc. And we didn't have any genetic understanding, because that happened, you know, not that long ago either. And so we didn't have any understanding, really, about plants in general, other than observed effects, which was not too bad, by the way, in some quarters. Like in Eastern sciences, the people in India, China, Tibet, and eventually Japan, had some understanding of how certain plants can be medicinal and helpful, etc., that was lacking to some extent in general in the West. But there was, it's like Hildegard and others, certain advanced people, humans, in the West that had some understanding of herbs and the science of herbs. And if you go way back in time, the Romans, at the peak of their civilization, had pretty good understanding of some herbal remedies, etc. The problem was it was mostly trial and error and observation without a true science being developed of why. Science answers the question why, and for the most part, that was just completely outside of the realm of human experience, because those people were not in our sub-race of humans. They didn't develop the scientific side of their minds, their mental minds, and so they very lack a lot of causal kinds of thinking. So our ability to control plants was considerably less than our ability to control and incorporate minerals into our kingdom. So we were better at minerals than plants. And then if you go to animals, we have the least understanding of animals. And that sounds hard to believe, because husbandry and hunting and raising livestock seems to have been with us for a long time. But you see, when you raise animals mostly to eat, you learn very little about the animals, other than trying to hunt them down or grow them for food. And we still don't know that much about animals. Now, you could say, well, what about those Indians and other people in different elements of society? Well, yeah, they actually did learn something more about animals. They were not incorporated, that knowledge was not incorporated among the fifth sub-race of humans, because those people were more primitive and it never really made it into our understanding. So a lot of that knowledge was lost. It actually was garnered during the Atlantean times and kind of languished with these people that came out of that period of time. And it unfortunately was never codified or well understood, so it got lost in their own civilizations. So, and it was mostly astral, by the way. It was not causative. They didn't understand why animals did what they did, but they understood the feeling level of how animals responded to each other and how they could relate to animals using that understanding in an imaginative and creative imaginative sense. So it worked for them. It doesn't work for us because we can't structure it and apply it in a scientific way. Now, recently we've gotten obviously better at all three of those things that I just said were the kingdoms below us. But still, if you look at the amount we understand far more about minerals than we do about plants, and far more about plants than we do about animals. Still, it's still in that order. And if you average it all together, we just barely are over the middle point starting around 1975. So that kind of gives you some understanding about the kingdoms and why kingdoms are part of this process, and trying to deal with the next kingdom gets to be really sticky. because of what I'm going to explain to you now. Okay, ready for this? This is where it gets difficult and somewhat esoteric. I'll make it as easy as I can. Imagine this. Human beings think in a concept sometimes. Sometimes we don't think in concepts at all. We just think in what is known as thought forms, which is examples of the concepts. What is a concept? A concept explains the cause of something and answers the question why. Explains the cause of something and answers the question why. That's a concept. And we sometimes try to understand the cause of something and answer why, and other times we don't. We just want to know, okay, I don't want to know why. I just want to have the knowledge I need to be able to do this or that. Well, okay, there's nobody forcing anyone to do that, but if you don't know why, the next time you see something similar to that issue, you can't apply the why, and you have to go back and figure out for each specific example a solution. And that doesn't help very much in the kind of world that we live in today. So for the most part, the more advanced thinking humans think at least in a concept or two, usually employing one major concept and sometimes one or two or three minor supporting concepts about that major concept when they think. But they don't think any more than that. That's it. That's their level of thinking. And for most of you, you would probably say, well, what more do you need? You know, if I got an answer why something is, why do I have to know anything more than that? Well, it comes out this way. If you knew all of the reasons why something is, an example, a certain whatever it is that we're talking about, a certain outcome, then the ability to be accurate and wise in your thinking will be just dramatically increased. The ability to get to the truth of anything would be tremendously improved. But the most important thing would be the ability to think would be dramatically increased in question of time. You would separate far less time from space. You wouldn't use as much time to be able to think of anything. It would be like you suddenly became super, super, super genius of sorts. And this is a big deal. But humans, in general, don't think that way at the present time. They think in one concept, one major concept, at least, at a time. And that is called, by the way, higher monastic or higher mental. Monastic is just a fancy word for mental. Thinking. It's higher mental thinking. That's it. That's what we do. We do higher mental thinking. There are different levels of concepts in that higher mental thinking, and they're divided up in certain ways. And some people do much bigger concepts than others, and therefore they have higher mental thinking than others. But they're still doing pretty much one concept, one major concept at a time. Now, let's go into the next kingdom and talk about how they think, okay? In order to be thinking in the next kingdom, you have to use something that I referred to at the beginning of the show, and that's called controlled intuitive thinking. Now, what the heck is that? That sounds like some kind of complicated, mystical, wacko thing. Actually, it's amazingly simple to describe, although difficult to understand if you have never done it or have only done it once or twice or three times in your life. It's very difficult because of the ability to understand it from direct experience. We can only extrapolate it if we haven't done something before. Now, some people have done this sort of thinking. They probably aren't that large of a number of them, and how many are listening to the show, I don't know. But for those of you who do understand what I'm going to explain, that's going to be helpful for you. That's great. If you don't get all upset, because this is your future, and the good news is you're eventually going to get there, And I'll even talk tonight about how you can improve that, because that's what part of tonight's show is going to be about. Okay. So, what does that next kingdom do that we don't? And then I'll get to how they do it. But first, let's talk about what they do. They can think of as many concepts at a time as their ability is, responsibility and ability is, to be of service to others in any one circumstance. And sometimes the number of concepts isn't one with a supporting two or three. It's maybe 100,000 with a supporting million. I mean, and that sounds ridiculous by some people's standards, because who could even think of 100,000 anything if they're human? And let me be more specific so that you're clear about what I'm saying. When someone is in service and their service is capable of serving at 100% level, which means they're totally focused out, and they're not thinking of themselves in any way selfishly, and their service is capable, they're capable in a number of different ways, which we can get into later, of providing the service, which includes their own thought, to others. And the others are those that need the service in whatever way that is. This is very general now. Then that person has, by the nature of what I just described, developed in themselves this new kind of thinking called controlled intuitive thought. Some people would just refer to it as Buddhic thinking. There are seven kinds of controlled intuitive thought, which I'll also get into in tonight's show, which helps us to understand how to communicate still with the next kingdom by understanding all these things that I'm bringing up tonight so far will help us in this. So those in the next kingdom can do this that we're talking about, do this thing that we're talking about. And once you start thinking in multiple major concepts, you're no longer thinking in monastic or mental terms. Now, why is that? How come we can't just have thousands of concepts you're thinking on in a place called the mental world? Well, it's very simple. Actually, the answer to that is simpler than you might think. The mental world does not have fast enough time connected to space to allow someone to be able to do that. There's not enough time. And you can say, well, what does that mean? It means that the ability to control time and space within the framework of thought is reduced to too low of a level due to physics, the physics of dimensionality of the mental world. Even at the very highest point in the mental world, someone cannot achieve the results I just described. It's not possible because the mental world, the physics of the mental world will not allow it. Now, I could explain what that physics is, but that's going a little far astray for tonight's show, and we can do it in another show another time. So for right now, you can kind of either take it as I say it, or you can doubt it or whatever, but that's the problem. That's the reason we can't think in controlled intuitive thought and be in mental thinking. It's just not possible. You have to go to the next dimension, higher dimension of time and space. And you could say, a lot of people are going to ask, well, how much greater is that? Well, dozens of times at a minimum, like 30, 40 times or more from the atomic level of the mental world, which is about 1,000 times faster than the way we think in the physical world, but it's still not that fast. And you get up to the Buddhic world, and it's like now suddenly 35,000, 36,000 times faster as soon as you get there. Now, you could say, well, I don't know that much. Well, 36,000 times faster is profoundly faster than 1,000 times faster than we think, than the average person thinks in the physical world. And if you multiply that whole thing up, you got yourself into a real big number. It's a huge number. So basically, you're talking 36,000 times faster than we normally think here. That's a lot of time. I mean, and so an hour of time in someone thinking at the very, very lowest point in the Buddha plane, which I'm going to explain why that usually doesn't happen, is actually much faster than this, would be 36,000 hours of a human being, an average human being's thought. Well, for a lot of people, that's past the end of their physical life, depending upon their age. So, I mean, that's a lot of time. And you can see how that just makes it so that people who think in this Buddhic thinking are doing some amazing things. Now, the fact of the matter is that most people who think in controlled intuition think not from the very lowest point of the Buddhic plane, but actually from a couple of subplanes higher, called the fifth subplane of Buddhic thought, which by thinking near, they have what is known as controlled wisdom and controlled intuition. And those people think about, give or take, 60,000 times faster than folks do here in the physical world, on average. Not in great thinkers, but in the average folks, 60,000 times faster. So if someone spent a minute thinking here, that would, someone spent a minute thinking in controlled intuition, that would be the equivalent of about 1,000 hours of time for someone thinking in the physical world, that is, has averaged 1,000 hours. It's a lot of time. Because there's 24 hours in a day times 365. Yeah, well, okay, it's something like 60 days or something like that. Or 40 or 50 days of thinking for 1 minute's time. Oh, wow. 1 minute. Okay, so you can start seeing how this time model really separates us from those who think and then serve in the Buddhic world. And actually, masters think a little bit more than that. They think at least, at a minimum, around 70, 75,000 times faster, and are capable of thinking 140,000+ times faster. I mean, these are staggering numbers. We get into the points now. You can start seeing why it's difficult for communication to be had between humans and these beings that are called liberated souls in the next kingdom. I mean, like, they're so far beyond us that they are greater in consciousness and in their ability and thought and time to think that it takes them to think between them and us than we are between ourselves and the smartest of the primates. Yeah, as a matter of fact, than we are between us and dogs or cats. You're starting to see the issues about them. That's just, the separation is pretty large. Actually, it's more like between us and probably one of the lowest forms of animal life, maybe us and a mouse or something. It's a little hard for us to comprehend this. And this puts us into a spectrum of understanding. I'm trying to gain the context under which we're talking about how to develop communication and the difficulties we're going to be discussing, so that everybody has this comparison to deal with, because even the smartest, the very smartest of humans that aren't spiritually serving, the difference is not that much different from even the people who are average folks. There are some. Smartest people might be maybe dozens of times in time factor better. Maybe 100 times. But not 140,000. I mean, it's like, that's like just way, way, way different. So just pure intelligence doesn't make up for this problem. All right. So it has a lot to do with this thing called service. We got that down, but I'm going to explain it a lot more because it doesn't define it much. It just gives you, it gives you an explanation, but it doesn't really fulfill all of the needed things we need so we can understand how and why and et cetera we're going to become eventually members of the next kingdom, and how we can start developing this right now by communication. All right, so now that we have this problem at hand, there was a time when humans would lower their thinking to the level of monastic or mental thinking so they could communicate with humans. And it wasn't that long ago. It was before, for the most part, before the year 1925. Yeah. Spring of, or early summer, depending upon the year, but it really was the spring of 1925. Before that, humans and masters, and sometimes the higher energy beings too, would be communicating with the, us, with humans, on a fairly consistent basis throughout the world. I mean, it happened not with everybody, but it did happen. And so there were reports of this going on all over the place because it was true. Well, why in the heck wouldn't they continue to do that sort of thing? I mean, it seemed like humans were developing more spiritual life. There was millions, tens of millions of people that belonged to spiritual organizations, from the Theosophical Society to various other and sundry groups, including the Eastern Star, et cetera. And these groups were very concentrated or focused on communication with these beings. Now, here's the problem. This is sort of the crux of the whole situation. The next kingdom already knew that a Second World War was coming. They knew that the next World War would involve evil trying to take over the mental world, using propaganda mostly and other means. And they also knew that the communication they were having with humans had already turned to a manipulation and a control issue, and that this manipulation and control would become the dominant factor if they continued to be in communication human beings, behind the evil parts of those nations that were going dark and mostly were fascistic in some fashion or totalitarian and adopting some elements of fascism. And so this was a real concern because they were going to become the problem, because evil turns everything around and then uses it for their own means, the reverse. And so this communication with masters was turning more and more into an ego trip for some people and being used to make it seem like they were special and important and powerful people. And it gave them power over others. Now, this was before there was even the 1930s, where this was going to start taking place. This was 1925. But the spiritual hierarchy saw this coming and decided that it had to curtail for the most part, not 100%, but for the most part, communication on any mental level with human beings. And so that's what they started to do. This caused a real problem. Those who had some communication and were doing spiritual work continued to have it. New people could not, for in the most part. And the people who were using this information in more egocentric and hostile ways to their fellow people in service lost contact. While this is good, very good, you would think. However, it also means that the distance separating humanity from superhumans became far greater. And the ability to have connection and any communication with them, for most people, fell to almost zero. So the knowledge and understanding of the next kingdom all diminished, like virtually overnight, by the way. And to prove this, if you look at the numbers of the people in the Theosophical Society and the Eastern Star, which had to do with Krishnamurti, for those of you who are not who are familiar with that, there were 8 million people in the Eastern Star in 1925. In 1935, there were about 80,000. Yeah, that's a big drop. And by the beginning of, just a few years later, beginning of World War II, it dropped to about 40,000, and then by the end of World War II, it didn't exist anymore. Wow. How's that for dramatic numbers? Theosophical Society, very similar kinds of percentage changes, to the point where by the 1970s, the Theosophical Society, which had tens of millions, close to 100 million members worldwide, and that's when the world was not as populated as it is today, tens of millions of members throughout the world fell to about 5,000 or 6,000 in the United States, and about maybe another 5,000 or 6,000 throughout the world. I mean, we're talking about a very, very small number, including India, where they were immensely popular and had large numbers of people. So, I mean, when you look at these staggering numbers, you got to say to yourself, wow, this really did stop communication. And that means these organizations were keeping alive some of the philosophy of ageless wisdom, which included knowledge about the next kingdom. So the knowledge of the next kingdom has really been almost sterilized out of human civilization within the last 90 years or so. This is unbelievable. And it was actually caused by a decision made by the next kingdom to save us from ourselves, with no choice but to, unfortunately, go down this route. And it will continue for about another, well, we'll say 8 to 10 years. And there will be this 100-year respite, and then it will start changing fairly quickly to larger and larger numbers. But this is, and for those of you who are listening to the show, you can appreciate this. I'm sure you know that, because most people who are listening to the show have some understanding about the next kingdom, but you know most of your friends and associates and maybe even family have no clue, right? They think you're nuts. Because in a very short time, things are erased. History has changed. People don't even know that it used to be a certain way. It's just gone. It's remarkable. And myths are produced, oftentimes making things dark that were really light and vice versa, and all kinds of strange things. Okay, so this is what we're contending with. It's not a simple issue, simple way of reversing for individuals now and groups, because we're going to be really talking about mostly groups tonight. Pretty darn hard these days to have much individual communication with members of the Next Kingdom. I know some people imagine they do. Oftentimes they're having communication with people who live in the astral world. They are people, just like us, but sometimes more selfish than the average person is, who just want to make a name for themselves. They love talking, and especially if they have communication with someone who will listen. They'll even get in and try to possess that person or do something that is like that. This is a strange situation for us because basically it provides a kind of a smokescreen to the truth, and it prevents us from further moving ahead. So those kinds of communications are only negative in terms of improving the spiritual life of people, but unfortunately, that's the way it is right now. And there's a lot of people who, even when they are sincere, they do mostly meditation, but they don't do much service, and that causes them to think they have a lot of communication that they really don't have. Now, when I talk about communication, I'm talking about the real deal communication. Communication is not having a feeling or some kind of sense that there's a master out there who's saying something to you. It could be your own solar angel. That's a different thing. We'll talk about that. But I'm talking about outside of that realm of probability or possibility. Outside of your own solar angel, having communication with masters of the ageless wisdom outside of that solar angel is extremely difficult and rare. And it would require a lot of spiritual service, usually, almost exclusively, with the help and work of other people in what we call a spiritual group. So this is the bottom line of how we can look at this situation. Now, for right now, I'm going to go ahead and go to a break here in another few seconds. So I want you to all think about this during the break, that this problem we're having is fairly serious. This is not a small thing. Tonight's topic sounds very, very innocuous, developing communication with the Next Kingdom. Actually, it's a biggie. And there's a lot of corollary kinds of issues that we'll talk about. And there's some solutions, which I'll suggest. So if you stand by and continue to listen to the show, we'll get to the point where I can explain what you can do to improve your communication along with others that you know. Okay, so at this point, we'll go ahead, and I think it would be a good idea to take a break right now, and then we will be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yeah, and we're talking tonight about developing communication with the next kingdom. And this is a sort of how-to-do show, but a lot of it has to do with understanding the nature of the problems, so that we can prepare ourselves to overcome these issues. And realizing that times are not like they were if you read some of the older books in theosophy and many other subjects. It seems like, well, just anybody could have communication with any old master that happens to be available. Well, no, because that was all changed, as I explained in the last segment, about the year 1925. And since that time, it's become very, very difficult to do this thing that seemed to be going on all over the place just 100 years ago. Okay, so let's move ahead to how we're going to deal with this subject, because it sounds like it's almost an impossibility for a human being to do what we're talking about doing. Just even thinking in multiple major concepts at the same time, even 3 or 4 or 5, 10, is a huge problem. And that even in itself doesn't even get you into the Buddhic world. So this is like, holy cow, these masters, these beings, masters of the ageless wisdom masters, I'm talking about, are they're just way out there. And they're not getting any less able to do this sort of thing. So if we're going to get to where they are, we have to broach a huge gulf. Now, you remember what I said, that the way to achieve this, way of multiple concepts, is to be 100% in service in your own thinking, not thinking of yourself, and able in some way to respond, be responsible to those that you are serving. So it can't just be some mental exercise. And it goes well beyond mental. It can't just be a Buddhic-minded exercise. It has to involve actual doing things in the world, the dimension that you live in, which for us here is the physical world. And so this is quite a challenge for us, because that level of service most individual humans cannot do. And that's why it seems so daunting, even as I explain it. But there's good news. You don't have to do it alone. As a matter of fact, it's almost necessary to do it with others. Now, why is that so? And the others have to be at the same level of response, or similar, to the average of all the people. So if you're going to get a group of people together to do this with, you can't have one that's just, you know, so low that it's not going to do anything for you, because that person doesn't even count. And it may become a drag on the situation. So you got to have a lot of people working in a group together in service studies that are similar in their ability to respond. And beyond being just similar in their ability to respond, these folks have to literally commit themselves in a long-term fashion to the service that they're doing, because the service is almost never something on a very short order. It's usually involves a lot of planning, takes weeks, months, years to accomplish, and requires a great commitment. And you can't go to, like, some silly nonsense group of people and say, well, this will be easy because they're easy to get along with, they're easy to work with. I can just work with those folks, and I don't have to work very hard because they're not going to do very much. Well, guess what? That's just nonsense. It's just cheating. You can't really achieve anything that way. Your level of response will never be met by the group that you're trying to get into, so you don't. It doesn't mean anything. It's a useless exercise. I know people that have tried to do that. It's silly. But it's even harder to find a group of people that have the level of response that you want. And if you found them, whatever you do, don't leave. Because if you go away, the act is so selfish that your chances of finding another group is zero. Because you've cut your own awareness down and your consciousness that would allow you to find another group. So that you just go through life either pretending like you're doing it or not doing it at all. It's the same result. It doesn't matter. So I tell people this because it's very challenging to be in a spiritual group. It causes a lot of personality interactions that cause people to be caught in their glamours, their illusions in general, in each of their bodies. Glamours are desires, which are illusions in the astral body. A lot of things come into play that prevents people from serving. And if you can't serve, you can't have controlled intuitive thought. So you see the problem. And for some people, this is a huge issue. Why? Because the level of service for people who are spiritually disciplining themselves has gone to a very high mark. Because we've incorporated all of these lower kingdoms in our civilization that we're responsible for now, it is much more difficult to serve because you've got to be serving in a level of responsibility at the level that the kingdoms now are part of the civilization, and that's much higher than it's ever been, and therefore the demands on a person to serve are much greater. And the tolerance for in-service or disservice is very high. So that's where we're at right now. In comparison to what you may have read about something that happened in 1900 or 1910 or 20, those times are gone. And the relatively simple things of having full moon meditations and saying alms and ohms and whatever, and maybe doing the most minor of things in service, are gone. They're not here anymore, and they're not going to come back. You want to serve, you've got to serve at your level of response, and your level of response has to equal the level of need in the world around you. Well, if you don't think the world needs spiritual service, then you're probably not ready to take this step. All right. So, we have some understanding then that we need to serve in spiritual groups equal to our level of ability to respond, and it also requires that we're not functioning in a selfish fashion by having lowered that level through some extreme action like walking out of a spiritual group that you were in before or putting it on hiatus for maybe 20 or 30 years or whatever. People do all kinds of very strange and self-destructive. So, okay, if you can get past that, then you can say, well, how do I find a spiritual group? Well, the interesting thing is you find a spiritual group through service. That's it. That's the only way. You can't look it up on the internet. Nope. You never will find a group that way, I guarantee it. You have to be willing to serve at a huge level, and the group finds you through your service by collectively either being a group already and that you're absorbed into, and more often, that forms around you and them together at one time. This is the more common way that spiritual groups are developed. Now, then, after that, they may infrequently find people to enter the group. The larger groups that are spiritual are called first-level initiate groups, and those groups only keep members for 2 to 5 years on an average. And as people leave, people come in. Sometimes they grow some, but they usually don't get past a certain level, but they're definitely larger than any other kind of group. It's just because the level of spiritual service is at a commitment level no greater than, on an average, 2 to 5 years of a person's life. Well, that's not a very big commitment to spiritual service. And those people only develop controlled intuition to a very small level because it takes 2 to 5 years to get almost any controlled intuition, and about the time they're really getting it, they're gone on an average. So most first-level initiates have absolutely no ability to have a connection with the next kingdom, most, I'd say. Now, teachers of first-level initiate groups and leaders of them stay for decades and sometimes a whole lifetime in that group. They're the only ones that do, usually. The rest of the folks are coming in and out like a revolving door situation. And those people, because they stay so long, do start developing some significant levels of controlled intuition, enough so they may actually have some minimal levels of contact with those in the next kingdom. Possible. But they're rare. Because although there's a lot of members of first-level initiate groups, there's very few spiritual teachers and leaders of those groups, because there's only usually one leader, and oftentimes one, but sometimes two or three teachers, and that's it. And those are called little teachers. And so, interestingly, it's a very small number, even though there might be, first-level initiative groups are in the tens of thousands worldwide, but there really aren't more than 25, 30,000 spiritual disciples that have any contact with the next kingdom from all those levels of spiritual groups that are first level. Spiritual groups. First level means they mostly use their etheric and physical senses in their service. Wow, that's amazing when you think about it. And that's very limiting in the number of people who can communicate with the next kingdom. And their level of communication is extremely limited. Extremely. It's not like having conversations every day with your best friend. It might be having a small, short conversation every few years to once a decade or so. Now, they do have communication with their solar angel, possibly even daily. But that's more about, oftentimes, conscience and encouragement to further serve in certain ways, especially with those you're co-serving with. So it's sort of an adjunct to the group process. It's a good thing. It's very good. And it only involves service. So you're not going to get communication with your solar angel who's going to tell you some better way to exercise or learn how to properly eat. Not going to come from the solar angel. Solar angel's only dealing with service. Okay. Well, then, what about second-level initiate groups, groups predominantly populated by people in the second level of initiation? They have a bit more controlled intuition that develops, partly because they tend to stay in their groups a longer period of time. And they oftentimes develop themselves beyond group service groups into national and world service. Very, very few first-level initiate groups have much to do at all with world service. So there are level of service changes to a much more committed level of service where it's required to stay in the group a lot longer. And they tend to commit for usually decades at a time, not uncommon. And those in a World Service group are supposed to commit for an entire lifetime. The ones that drop out of the World Service group, it's usually not, doesn't go well for them. But regardless, the staying with the World Service group, regardless of what level of initiation, is very critical and important because of the need for continuity in order to achieve any kind of thing that was going to affect the whole world. It takes a lot. You have to be really committed to it. And if you stop the service in the middle, it's like you never did it at all. That's the weird thing about it. I won't go into the karma of that particular situation, but you can believe me that you either go for the whole enchilada or you shouldn't be doing it at all because it doesn't matter. You're not, you get, there's no net result. You get zero result. And it could make the group become no result as well. So ultimately, this process is a huge commitment, and it requires a major amount of change. And the spiritual discipline and the people that within a second level issue group. Now, in these groups, you do see that there is better communication. Better in what way? Well, it depends. If there is no major teacher, a big teacher. This is a teacher who has regular communication, but this often, but it's regular communication with the member or members of the next kingdom. Then the individuals in the group have staggered and very infrequent, like maybe once every 5 years or so, communication with one of the masters of the spiritual hierarchy. Now, this sounds a little strange because it's staggered. It works something like this. Usually, one of the members, oftentimes the leader, in a group where there's no major teachers, no big teachers, it's oftentimes one or more smaller teachers in these groups. They, usually the leader will be the leader in those groups for 5-10 years at a time, and then they'll switch. And then, while they're a leader, they actually have communication with a member of the next kingdom, provided they can make it to 5 or 10 years. And then the communication may stop with them because, first of all, they give up the leadership role. Another person might take it, or one of the small teachers may have communication. Or sometimes it's a member who does an unusual level of service within a short period of time, still connected to all the other members, they may have an experience of communication. Now, it all comes from service, remember that. It isn't because somebody's giving points out, and you get enough points, you get to have a phone call. You know, no, it doesn't do that at all. It's based upon the level of service, and it's completely calculatable by how a person is serving within the group. Wow. Now, here's the kind of inverse issue here. If a spiritual group that is along the second initiation has a teacher that is a big teacher who usually has contact once, twice, or more often a year with a master of the Ageless Wisdom, that's a lot of communication, by the way. And sometimes those communications are related to crises, certain issues of service, there's a lot of issues, but it's always about the service of that teacher connected with the students. Never the teacher alone, and never the students alone, but it has to be connected to the teacher. So it's a very complicated thing, because the teacher and the students are actually becoming one, they're joining together. If it's a big teacher, this teacher who is usually an advanced initiate. So in these situations, the rules kind of change around. You're getting a lot more communication between the next kingdom, but only or mostly through that one teacher. If a leader of a group stays for 5 or 10 years, they may have communication with the teacher, and that's not uncommon to have happen. Now, the communication may not be as dramatic or lengthy or as often as it is with the major teacher, but it still starts to happen. It's not uncommon. And so when these things all take place, it's because of service. Service is what creates people into this situation. In some circumstances, someone starts with a relatively, we'll say, narrow and low understanding of ageless wisdom and service, etc. But they're stars. They become great servers because they just answer the call. Whether they're a leader or not, they become like a leader in any case. And those people, while they may take a little bit longer to have communication with the member of the next kingdom, the chances of them having it are even higher. But it just might take a little longer because they started at such a low level, they have to grow the, both their consciousness and have their service developed because they didn't do it slowly, they did it fast. They moved in fast. And the weird thing about it is these people oftentimes serve beyond their consciousness for protracted periods of time. When you serve beyond your consciousness, which doesn't seem possible, I understand, it's because you're starting to pick up Buddhic thought at a earlier rate than would seem possible because you're willing to sacrifice elements of mental thinking and other elements of physical life if you're in physical existence. It's a huge sacrifice, but it can be done. And when this happens, it can lead to communication eventually, even though a person may not even have the level of consciousness that oftentimes people have when they have communication with the next kingdom. Now, let's talk about the percentage of consciousness a person needs to have so that we understand it. Generally speaking, you need about 50% of unification in the mental body, 50%, 50%. To achieve any significant levels of communication with the master. Could you have a single incident for a short period of time and be less than 50%? No, probably it's possible. But generally, that's the number you're looking for. And if you're going to have a lot of communication, it's going to go beyond that. 50% unification of the mental body and consciousness is a huge number. The average person, the average human being has 2%. That's a bright person. 2%. That's 25 times more conscious than an average bright, intelligent person has. That's amazing. Now remember, intelligence and consciousness, while having some relationship to each other, are not the same thing by any stretch. So, this is a, you know, when you put this together, it starts making some sense why it's so difficult to have communication with members of the next kingdom. You've got all these conditions that are required and that are not that easily obtained. Okay, we're going to take a little bit of a break right now, and we'll come back and revisit this. I wanted to tell you, again, I've been using these orthotics that help you gain better posture. It's great for your feet. And they're designed by a Dr. Jarrett, and they're really great. I mean, these are truly amazing because they work within weeks. Initially, you feel some improvement, and within months, of dramatic improvement. And what is the improvement? Well, if you have flat feet, it gives you an arch again. That's a big deal. If you have bunions or all those other kind of foot problems, you can get rid of them. And if you have a thing called Morton's neuroma, which is just a swollen nerves in the ball of your feet, those can go away. Most people don't even know what the name of it is, but they know that their feet sometimes swell up and the toes start becoming numb. And at first it's transient and then eventually it becomes more permanent. That's Morton's neuroma. If you've got those symptoms, you need these theta orthotics. That's what they're called. And you can look for them on the internet because he sells them over the internet. But he also does individual consultation in the price of buying the orthotics. And he, you can call him and anytime, and he'll talk to you. And there's no charge other than just what you paid to get the orthotics. This guy is serious about what he's doing. He's doing a great job. So I do recommend to give him a shot and try it. Now, some people are, you know, oh, I tried orthotics. I went over to the station in the drugstore, makes them for you, or tells you how to, which ones to buy, and this and that. Well, the thing about that is that those orthotics do not deal with the three major points that you have to deal with when you have a serious foot problem. And the Theta orthotics deals with all three of these conditions and allows a person to quickly regain some of the problems, overcome, I should say, some of the problems they had, and regain their normal posture and proper use of their feet as they would have if they hadn't worn the wrong kind of shoes and just had sloppy walking posture problems for a long time. Try Dr. Jarrett's stuff. It works. And you can, if you do, go on online and look for it. You can tell him, let him know that you heard about it right here. And I really believe in this. That's the reason I'm talking about it right now, not because there's any exchange of anything between he and I to do these. I'm doing this because I believe he's doing great service. I only do these quote-unquote commercials to help others who are in service. I'm not doing commercials to sell widgets. Okay. That doesn't mean that we couldn't sell widgets if we wanted to, but right now there's not much in the widget industry that will help people. Okay. Let's get back, because I don't want to take much time, because we've got a lot of things to talk about. All right. So what about people who are in more advanced spiritual groups, like third level initiate groups? Well, those groups almost always are doing national or world service. They require that the people in the groups have some level of controlled intuition. And if people stay in the groups for more than a few years, they're going to end up having some contact over time with members of the next kingdom. They don't have it right away, but they usually have it within 5, 6, 7 years. Every member will have some communication. It won't be every 6 months or whatever, but they're going to have some communication. The communication usually involves, again, their service. It may involve interactive issues in their group. And it oftentimes involves a thing called the renunciations. So they're intimately involved on certain levels with the next kingdom. Now, there's not that many of these groups around, so be aware of that. They have a propensity to have big teachers, teachers who are either third-level initiates themselves or are arhats, which are called fourth-level initiates, or vice versa, as the teacher in their group. Teachers that are at that level, who are like arhats, have regular communication with members of the next kingdom. They don't have it frequently because they're expected to kind of be like a member of the next kingdom in a junior sense. And they have a lot of more responsibility to act in that capacity. And they're joining in their minds, their mental minds, is being given up. They are being given up to their students, so they have to think much more of the time in controlled intuition. As a matter of fact, they have to be in controlled intuition, almost all the time they're in service. They use their mental mind then as a tool and as a gift to their students who are actually in service. The student that is not in service abuses the mental mind of their teacher, but they don't use it per se. So it's a very interesting arrangement, you could say. And these third level initiate groups are very rare. They come out of usually groups that were successful as second level initiates and have advanced to the third level stage. The groups that are rarest among them are the ones along the second ray, which is a teaching ray. You would think that those groups would be successful because the second ray has been in focus on our planet, helps people to use their heart chakra better, etc. But unfortunately, the weakness of being a teacher is that you're helping, you're in service to help others in the area of consciousness. And usually groups that focus about developing consciousness in others have the most trouble in developing it in themselves because they have to sacrifice some of that consciousness to help others. So it's kind of a circular and contradictory, paradoxical logic. And it makes these groups oftentimes fail. So it's not so easy to serve in that way. Although there are a lot of groups that are trying. It's not like they don't try, but the success rate is very bad. Even though there's a large number of triers, there's few succeeders. More groups succeed along the more obscure rays. They do better. By more successful groups along the seventh ray or fifth ray, even the fourth ray, than the second, as you move up from the higher spiritual focused servers, it's hard to maintain the group process. All right. So then we have the question, if this is the process that we're dealing with and communication is so hard for most people with the next kingdom, how does the next kingdom ever do this thing called externalization where they become part of the physical plane through developing new kinds of bodies? And so very, very evolved process. How do they achieve this? And how do they ever get to the point where the two kingdoms are starting to work more together as they used to? And the answer is there needs to be a breakthrough in world service groups in general, because it's only through world service groups that the next kingdom will be able to breakthrough and achieve it. And the most important groups are the world service groups along the second ray, because those are the ones that have been least successful rather than most. And it really requires unusual and extraordinary efforts for this to come about. But if enough of the world service groups other than second ray were successful, it could happen that way. But if they aren't, and there's no second ray world service group that succeeds, the world could go dark, and very, very bad things will happen to everybody. The planet will fail. Huge numbers of people will suffer. People who didn't serve at the levels that they should have will probably suffer more than others, but everybody's going to suffer. It is a bad, bad situation. So it's up to those people, and you know who you are, who are spiritually serving, to serve for the whole world, because there isn't much hope otherwise. Now, who came up with this crazy system? Well, kind of the being that created this planet to begin with thought it'd be a good idea to try this system, which requires unusually extreme measures, extreme efforts by so few. So much is demanded of so few with such disastrous results if they fail. It's not a system that's used in most worlds because it's like betting on the long shot. Everything. Well, that's a big problem. And it all has to do with this thing about initiation. The way the communication comes about is mostly through the process of initiation, although there's lots of times members of the next kingdom have communication besides through initiation. It's the initiation process which actually leads to it. And so this very convoluted, difficult process where only a few people are involved in it at any particular time is sensitive to just virtually any kind of irresponsible, destructive actions on the part of those that are supposedly spiritually disciplining themselves. Too much can go wrong, but it also goes faster, 10 times faster if it works. And the being that created this world and our souls that came here to serve in it came here to participate in a much faster process. Now you could say, gee, if I sold, signed up for this, I don't know why I went along with that, because it sounds crazy. Well, because as a soul, we know what we want. And what we want is to serve in a world where the maximum is expected of us with the minimum in return and a tremendous amount of suffering if we fail. Wow. That's what we signed up for. You may not buy it, but you will someday. It's just that you will do, if you don't buy it in time, you'll tremendously regret having not done so while you were physically alive. That's where the big time can happen, right here. Communication is most difficult while we're physically alive, and most important, and most helpful. Wow, talk about the cards being against us. I guess so. But stacked as they are, we all can achieve these results if we follow some basic principles and put in a tremendous amount of work on ourselves and serving and helping others to do that around us and doing everything we can to succeed as a group would succeed. Because on an individual level, we've got no chance at all. This is so hard these days. You just can't make it on an individual level. You got to do it with others. That doesn't mean you lose your individuality. You gain more individuality in the process. There's no mutual exclusion between individuality and functioning in group consciousness. The two go hand in hand. Wow. Okay. So let's start talking about some of the practical matters, because we don't have that much time left. And the practical side of this situation is that we need to apply the principles of spiritual discipline at phenomenally accurate and consistent levels. Consistency is much more important than accuracy, though. You can flub up here and there, but you need to be consistent in your spiritual discipline. A lot of people do the opposite. Oh, I'm going to really, 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 really try for 5 minutes. And then I'm going to really, really screw up for the next 24 hours. Now, that doesn't work. Trying and achieving a moderate level of results, but on very consistent levels, will get you much further. And hopefully improving yourself a little bit each day is even more of a factor added to the whole thing. So, what do I mean by spiritual discipline? Spiritual discipline means that you change yourself by limiting your awareness in certain ways and giving up a tremendous amount of experiences that you may find pleasurable in place of helping others, serving others. So you spiritually discipline yourself not for yourself to become better, but so that others can become better in consciousness and their service. Wow, that's hard. Because most people run into the paradox about that, where they say, well, I do want to improve myself, but I know that if it's all about me, I can't improve myself unless I'm focused out on trying to help others to improve themselves in spiritual service. And then the whole thing works. And you only can achieve that by being self-forgetful and developing intuitive thought. Now, let me explain what intuitive thought is again. That's the ability to think in more than one concept at a time. It happens spontaneously to some people while they're serving in the mental world for a few seconds to a minute at a time. But controlled intuitive thought is where within the plans that you make, like teaching a show on the radio, like I'm doing right now, the plans that you make are carried out in a style and expression of concepts, hundreds and hundreds, thousands of concepts, stated exactly as they need to be responsive to those that are being served, and that it coordinates with the things your group is doing and many other factors all together, so that you have a complete control over how the process is going to take place. And that whole plan and the control and everything may have taken place in seconds to minutes of time of thinking intuitively. That's it. You're done. Wow. Can that really happen? Well, yes, it can. And it does all the time. But in order to be successful in this developing communication with the next kingdom, it needs to happen in a person on a daily basis. Now, I'm going to give you some percentages to help you understand what this daily basis means. For those wanting at least a contact with the Master of the Ageless Wisdom, you're going to need to have more than 10% service on a daily basis consistently for probably beyond 5 years of time. Yep, okay. Got that so far? Okay. And that's if you're doing national or world service. If you're doing support group work, group service work, then it could be double that amount of time, 10 years or longer. Okay, let's say that you're in a national service group along the second level of initiation. Then you're going to need to be functioning 25% of the time using controlled intuition in your service with the group helping you to do this, because you're not going to be able to do it alone. And then you will have connection or communication with the Master of the Ageless Wisdom in usually, we'll say, 5 years or less, depending upon the person. But it may only happen once or twice. It may only happen a couple or a few times, depending upon the nature of your service and how well you're doing that with the other people in your group. How well means how many of the others are actually participating. Having only half the group participate has a tremendous disadvantage than the whole group. If you're doing like world service, then the 25% becomes also an issue of 25% at the group working together completely. You can't have half the people. And then you got to do it for probably 2 or 3 to 5 years. And you could expect to have communication with a member of the next kingdom. But you all got to be working together. And usually in those situations, the teacher may even be, if there's a big teacher present, will be involved in setting that whole thing up. If there's no big teacher present, then that won't happen from the little teachers that are present. If you're a member of a third-level initiate group that's doing world service, you're going to need to be functioning using the ability to serve from rooted consciousness 50% of the time or more. And you're going to need to do that with all of the members of your group all at the same time together. And then you'll have communication probably every couple of years, maybe less, maybe more often you'll have it. But the point is you will have experiences that will be pretty consistent. And, of course, the teacher of that group is going to be working consistently with the spiritual hierarchy, and there'll be time set up when the whole group as a group will be with the teacher. With the master or masters that they have co-service with in the next kingdom. So some of that time, those times when people have communication in a third level initiative group, will actually be collectively together, especially if they're successful in their service on a world scale. Wow. Now, how many groups are actually doing this, you might say? Well, in my opinion, probably none along the second way, and probably 6 to 10 in the world are having that level of communication. And since there aren't very many people in those groups, we're talking with a couple hundred people. That's pretty darn small. Maybe 100 even. It's a small number. And so you don't have as many people as you might think there are having communication with the next kingdom. It's just very small. And that's because at this time, that kingdom is no longer lowering its thought to the mental world. We have to raise ours to the Buddhic world. And that makes it difficult to all get out. Okay, what other ways can you improve yourself then? Improve your connection to a master. Well, the one thing you don't want to do, as suggested in some of the Leadbeater books or whatever, is to make an image of the master you want to communicate with and focus on that. Don't do anything like that. That's just nonsense. It's totally non-productive. You can't be focused on trying to have communication to get it. I'm doing tonight's show to give informatively people an understanding about it, but not to get people to focus on doing goofy things like that, because that will wreck your ability to have communication. Because that's spiritually ambitious. You're doing it for your own sake in some way and not to serve. All right, so the first thing is self-forgetfulness. You cannot be focused on your spiritual development, your life, your feelings about your life, your happiness, pleasure, a lack of consternation in problems, or a totally copacetic relationship with all the people you co-serve with, whatever it might be. You can't focus on those things, because if that's what you're focused on, you're never going to get communication with members of the next kingdom, because you're not serving. You're focused on yourself. Remember, you've got to be focused out, not serving on yourself. And the other ways that have been suggested in times past, such as groups trying to communicate together through meditation exercises, etc., all that's long, long gone, 100 years ago gone. And those things will, again, produce no results. They'll produce the opposite of what you're aiming for. You won't get the results you're looking for. You might get some, at the worst case scenario, you might get some really dark entities from the astral world communicating with you. It's kind of like so self-focused that you're inviting that possibility. And you don't want to do that. Okay. So what can a group of people do that is very positive and really provides the answer to this solution? Well, one of the things that has been mentioned in earlier texts, but it really hasn't been addressed, is to create a co-plan with the next kingdom by trying to understand what the big plan, with big P, capital P, is, of the next kingdom in your area of responsibility and ability to serve in. If you can understand what that plan is, even if it's a small piece of it, that puts you much, much closer to the spiritual hierarchy. And it demands their attention towards you. So conscious understanding of how what you're doing in your service affects the plans of the next kingdom, and therefore the outcome of how this world's going to be, is one of the best ways to improve your communication eventually with members of the next kingdom. It invokes their attention, and it evokes them to give attention to you because you have made yourself into a co-server with them by your willingness to understand their part, your part in their plan. I hope that makes some sense to you, because this is a really big solution. It's part of a solution for gaining connection, communication with the next kingdom. It makes a huge amount of sense, but to a lot of people, they think, unfortunately, that it's just sitting around and meditating, and it's just the opposite. It always involves significant action and significant devotion of our physical resources, as well as our astral and mental, towards the plan that we become part of. Expect to lose or give up or expend major parts of physicality and physical assets towards this part of the plan that you discover. The more you know of the plan, the more is demanded of you to give everything you have in a physical sense, besides emotional and mental, to the success of that plan. And if you're not willing to do that, believe me, you don't want to know more about the plan, because the karma is very, very bad. If you already know about the plan and you're not giving enough, you better get on the dime and do something about it, because this is one of the worst scenarios to set yourself up for. And you may lead yourself into terrible conditions. You get possessed by the other's dark side, or you get terrible karma can come befall upon you. So you don't want to do that. You want to make sure that whatever you gain an understanding about, you are willing to commit all of the resources in response to that plan, everything you've got, to its success. And remember, you can only do this within the group. Don't try and say, well, I'm going to go be a superhero. I'll forget about the group because I don't like them. I think I'll go do it myself. It's not going to work. And it's going to lead to a disaster, you know, for yourself and for our world. You've got to do this, because it can't be done individually. It hasn't been able to be done for ages, a long time, since 1925, for most people. So this is a big deal. And we're going to need every person who can do it to do it, because there's so few. So much, as you we already know, is demanded from so many, with so little actual outcome, because so many of the few fail. We need more success. Okay, so that's a big issue. Learning about the plan and then carrying through your responsibility to enacting it in your narrow niche of it, usually within your spiritual group. What else? Well, once you have a grasp of the plan, and you have a grasp of what you can and cannot do or need to be responsible within, and you've committed yourself and your resources and everything you're doing, then you need to do one other really amazing thing about the plan, and that is to see yourself succeeding in various ways by doing things in a future time that you can't do yet, to carry through parts of the plan that you're not able to achieve yet, but you have some glimmer of, and recognize that others may have to be doing it right now, but you can see yourself doing it at some point in the future. I hope you understood everything I just said. It was a mouthful of words. So this puts a demand on us to not only pledge ourselves as we are now, but to how we can imagine ourselves becoming at some point in the future. And oftentimes this is years away, and we're already committing ourselves to functioning in a co-service way with the spiritual hierarchy as a part of the plan with the spiritual group we're in, and seeing the whole group evolve to this point. So it isn't just seeing yourself evolve, it's the whole group is going to become more of a focused service. And this focused service is so that the world and the plan of the next kingdom can be successful. Now, I'm going to tell you some general, just general, nothing specific, areas of the plan of the spiritual hierarchy for the next, I'll start with the next decade, next 10 years, okay? Although this more appropriately would be the next 12 or 13 years, but we'll say the next decade. One of the areas that the spiritual hierarchy has planned to succeed in is to reduce the amount of darkness in the lower mind of people, examples of concepts now, by preventing or, we'll say, causing both the same. People who are presently very arrogant and or egotistical, yet have a lot of negative issues involved in the world, by causing their ability to think to diminish. And you could say, well, how could that happen? Well, their ability to think is based upon their ability to adversely have an effect on those who are thinking positively. And so part of this answer is to prevent those who are thinking positively and who are thinking along the spiritual plan from being discouraged through propaganda methods, discouragement methods, power grab methods, forceful issues, threats and fears, and loss of self-esteem or image, from doing the right kind of service in face of those who are arrogant and egotistical. So this requires backbone standing up, and it moves to the next part of the plan, which is to expose evil. Why is it so important to expose evil right now? Well, because humans have reached a peak, and they will next year reach a peak in their level of arrogance and egotism as a world. So humans collectively in the world will have reached the highest level of those things, arrogance and egotism. And it allows the most amount of evil to take over and try to reach a new level of evil called monastic or mental evil by taking over the lower minds of people. Very bad thing. And to prevent this, the spiritual hierarchy is trying to help certain groups of people to expose evil. Because in 13 years, 10 at a minimum, it'll be too late if it isn't done. Too late, meaning that evil will be able to continue to remain for very long periods of time hidden, because it will take over the minds, the lower minds, of significant numbers of people. That is a very dangerous condition, one that could lead to the entire ending of this world, the physical earth world will die out. Terrible things could happen. And then the astral parts of earth and mental parts of earth will be next in order. The whole thing, whole planet will go bye-bye. So this is one of the ways the spiritual hierarchy is, in its plan, trying to head off a disaster. What else is it attempting to do? It's attempting to keep technology more positive than negative in the face of a lot of crystallization along the third ray. Use technology for the benefits of humanity rather than the destruction as it's being used now more often than not. And try to help the groups of people that are presently serving in the different ray-focused areas to undo and to get these arrogant systems that are being developed in the civilization along the Third Reich, the newest technologies especially, to become used for good rather than for evil. Right now it's very mixed. So look at the internet. The internet is almost divided in half, 50-50. Half of the time the internet is used in very negative and selfish ways to carry out very negative and selfish deeds, some of the worst in society. The other half, it's being used to benefit humans, not just from information, but from enlightenment and the development of wisdom. So these two opposing elements in just this one technology are fighting each other. And spiritual disciples need to be working on the positive side of the internet. And only, well, those along the first ray should also deal with the negative side and try to stop it. So this is a really tremendously important part of the plan, is to make sure that our civilization doesn't go any darker than it is. And if it does go a lot darker than it is, the planet itself fails. We all go home, but it isn't to Earth anymore. And we'll start over again in another world, trying to make that world an enlightened world, sacred one. And we're pretty far from there right now. Okay, some other issues that can be of service in understanding the Next Kingdom's plan, and this is general now. Part of the plan in terms of Earth is to bring about a, we'll call it, spiritual transformation from the dogma of religion. Now, many people are familiar with the religion of Islam because of its extremist viewpoints among some of its members. This evil is supposed to work its way out in a fouling manner, according to the plan as I understand it. I'm not going to be too specific here, but I can give you the general idea. This evil of going out and killing the infidels because they don't believe in Islam, which is crazy, it's anti-God, it's anti-everything, is there to, at the present moment, in this time, get all of humanity to accept that everybody's religion is just one, another way of communicating with God and being aware of God, and that we shouldn't be trying to force anyone to change their religion, and instead, we need to be helping as many people to be closer to God, become more spiritual, not less spiritual, in general, and to condemn, restrict, in some cases fight against, any religion, but especially Islam at this time, that promotes destruction of life, destruction of religions, destruction of civilization, or some forms of civilization that they don't care for, through a anti-part of the plan, but a part of the plan of evil. So this is to expose evil, which was the earlier statement I made, but now to bring about a major shift in the plan itself by incorporating this amazing and definitely possible process of realizing that religion in and of itself is an obstacle in some circumstances, and rather spiritual or spirituality is the more critical element in any religion. And being a spiritual person and living your life that way, the actual functioning, is the key ingredient in that process. This is an important lesson, and we need to get it right in the next 10, 12 years. If we don't get that part right, we're going to be doomed for a very bad time after that. And it's got to really start very soon. Now, you could say, well, it's like having to reveal a bad so that other people will see good or something like that. Something like that is true. But the issues about what's wrong in Islam is really about what's wrong in human beings in general. And that is, we think we're right and everybody else is wrong to the exclusion of loving people and for the purpose of control and ultimately forcing us to be the way we want them to be. Well, these are not the ways that are part of God. They're not God's ways. They are the ways of selfish children. And they're certainly not a good thing to have in a world that at some point will become a sacred planet or be destroyed. Wow. Okay, I'll tell you one more thing about the plan in general. Now, remember, I'm not going into any specifics because that's forbidden for me. Not for you to find out the specifics. You can do that on your own. I'm just giving some generalities here so we can all understand this a bit better. Okay, the other thing that is part of the plan is for people to understand, learn and understand what consciousness is and seek it for its own existence rather than for some benefit to their material side or for some power trip or whatever or for some hypocritical image reason. The value of consciousness has to be rediscovered because it used to be pushed by the spiritual hierarchy and the masters before 1925 in the mental world. It's not done that way anymore. And so it's becoming lost. It has become lost for the most part. But the value of consciousness has to be established. And part of the plan is to do that. I can't tell you much more than that without revealing things that I'm not supposed to reveal. But I will tell you this, that when you start doing that part of the plan, you will develop a closeness with your co-servers that you never had before. So that's one of the things that's going to help you to do it. You will gain a unified consciousness with them and even share some of their senses together. Just amazing stuff will happen as long as you can, in your own right, do this with your own group of people. And you need to carry through on all these parts of the plan. There's many more that I didn't mention. Together as a group, or you will fail. And the plan itself, if enough groups do that, will fail. And there are certain groups that are more critical than others, the second-rate groups and the most critical, as I've already said. So if you're in a second-rate group, it's extremely important that you maybe re-listen to tonight's show, maybe gain an unusually high level of understanding about tonight's show, work on your own consciousness together, and realize that so much is important, so much is needed by you. Now, I want to finish out tonight's show with talking about what it's going to be like if we have communication with the next kingdom at even the amount, but at a higher level, that was done before 1925. I won't have very much time. I've got maybe 5-6 minutes here. But what I'm going to tell you is that we need to have this communication developed by about the year 2025. Or we're going to have some very bad times ahead of us. But getting away from the negative, I want to get to the positive. These are the things, let's assume we make it, and we get to this level of all the things I said about the parts of the plan and a lot more. Then okay, the communication will flow between masters of the ageless wisdom in us. The externalization process will start taking place, and masters will have regular communication with more and more spiritual groups. spiritual groups are not groups that even know themselves at this moment to be spiritual. So be aware of that fact. Some groups are spiritual groups that don't understand that even. It doesn't have to be, because they're not along the second ray, and they don't have to have that understanding. Only second ray groups have to have that understanding. They're just serving others. And in that service, they will experience communication with members of the next kingdom. Now, of course, once that starts happening, they're going to become more spiritual, and they're going to turn to the second ray groups to understand the experiences they're having, because this is new for them. Also, the externalization process can continue to the point, and some of the groups, and the first ones will be second ray groups, to actually have co-teachers be masters of the ageless wisdom, as sometimes happens in the astral and mental worlds right now. But it'll happen here in the physical world. Now, just imagine having that level of communication, maybe eventually on a daily basis, with a member of the next kingdom. What results will that have on you? Well, I want you to do that kind of as a homework assignment, because I can't tell each person who's listening that on a personal level, because they would have all kinds of unique experiences. But on a group level, I can tell you this. It'll mean that the group will become much more cohesive much more quickly, and will take the next initiation, possibly here in the physical world. Now, why is that so important? Because if you take initiation in the physical world, and you take it together with your group, you become much more effective as a group in changing the most important things to change where it needs to be changed the most, which is here in the physical world. If you listen to any of the other shows, you know what I'm talking about. It's the physical world that will determine the outcome of whether this planet even continues to exist, much less how much it can overcome evil and become a great sacred world where amazing ways of humans living and becoming superhumans takes place. This is what we have to look forward to if we can develop this kind of communication with the next kingdom in today's world, not the one of 100 years ago. We will incorporate the lower kingdoms to the point where they will start exuding light. Plants and animals and minerals have become enlightening parts of existence instead of dangerous or antagonistic elements to our civilization. They will become additive, creative, and helpful to all of us. That's what we have to look forward to. A world truly more abundant for everyone, truly more sacred, and maybe reaching a level of pure sacredness within 100 or 200 years or so. So I hope you all have gained something in understanding how developing communication with the next kingdom is really a critical element for all of us together. And we can do it. It is possible. It is actually a part of the plan. And we have some tough times coming in the next few years to overcome, including some very dark elements, some evil that's around us and growing daily. But once we do this, this next 10, 15 years, it will make the difference for a very long time. Hundreds of years will be affected by the outcome in the next 10 to 15. That's how important it is. Well, I'm out of time for right now, and I hope this show has really made a lasting impression. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.